Idam-yakaya uttaya
Idam-yakaya uttaya
Pranjali-shradayanvita
Pranjali-shradayanvita
Pranjali-shradayanvita Shrinuyat Shrayaven Martyo Muchyate Karma Bandhanai. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. A devotee who rises early in the morning and with folded hands chants these prayers sung by Lord Shiva and gives facility to others to hear them certainly becomes free from all bondage to fruitive activities. Purport. Mukti or liberation means becoming free from the results of fruitive activities. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6, Muktiya Hidvan Yata Rupam. Mukti means giving up all other activities and being situated in one's constitutional position. Svarupena Vyavastitihi. In this conditional state, we are entangled by one fruitive activity after another. Karma bandhana means the bonds of fruitive activity. As long as one's mind is absorbed in fruitive activities, he has to manufacture plans for happiness. The bhakti yoga process is different, for bhakti yoga means acting according to the order of the supreme authority. When we act under the direction of supreme authority, we do not become entangled by fruitive results. For instance, Arjuna fought because the supreme personality of Godhead wanted him to. Therefore, he was not responsible for the outcome of the fighting. As far as devotional service is concerned, even hearing and chanting is as good as acting with our body, mind, and senses. Actually, hearing and chanting are also activities of the senses. When the senses are utilized for one's own sense gratification, they entangle one in karma. But when they are used for the satisfaction of the Lord, they establish one in bhakti. I'll read the translation again. A devotee who rises early in the morning and with folded hands chants these prayers, sung by Lord Shiva, and gives facility to others to hear them, certainly becomes free from all bondage to fruitive activities. Ammagyanti mirandhasya gyananjana chalakaya chakshuran militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha mukham karoti vachalam pangum langaya tegrim Kripa tamahang vande shri guru dinataranam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, before I try to say something on this verse, I'd like to ask for blessings from the senior Vaishnavis and Vaishnavas. I can say something which is truthful and pleasing to all of you and also for my own purification. So in this verse, Lord Shiva, he's saying that he's basically giving like several instructions and the goal of these instructions. So he's giving a sadhana or spiritual practice and he explains what the goal or the sadhya of these spiritual practices will be. He says that somebody who rises early in the morning and with faith and devotion and faith, like with faith, devotion and very absorbedly chants these prayers offered by Shiva, he will get liberation, mukti. That's the goal. And for us, this is an important, instruction we can take from this is, yes, we do have a process. We do have to know what the process is, but we also need to know what the goal is of our practice. These two aspects are very important. Like we need to know the sadhana or the spiritual practices, and we need to know the goal or the sadhya of these practices. It's like you can give the examples of a train or wanting to go somewhere by a train or even with the car, traveling somewhere. If you only know the process, but you don't know the goal. You might get into a train, but you may just travel in a train for like hours and days and might not go anywhere. Whereas if you only know the goal, but you don't know the practice, you might say, okay, I want to go to Brussels. And, you know, I know there's a train, but I don't really know the timetable. I don't really know the direction. So I just hop into any train and, you know, you might end up in wherever, Luxembourg or Paris, or which is also nice, but it's not where we wanted to get. So it's important that we have both. We know the process and we know what's the goal of our process. So Lord Shiva here says that the goal of the process of glorifying the Lord is liberation. And I want to talk a little bit about the sadhana that he gives here, rising early in the morning. The phrase that's used here, it's Kalya Uthaya. Kalya meaning at dawn, like sunset, dawn? Sunrise, sorry, sunrise, dawn. Yeah, we don't want to get up at sunset. And Uthaya, rising. And Prabhupada also says that we should get up, especially during Brahma Muhurta, because that's the time which is very beneficial for spiritual practices. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that there's two types of human beings. There's those who, the transcendentalists, who look inward for self-realization, and then there's the materialists. And he says for the transcendentalists, what's day for a transcendentalist is night for a materialist, and vice versa. What's day for a materialist is the night for a transcendentalist. And we can understand that for a transcendentalist, he's absorbed in spiritual practices, and now specifically talking about devotees, what's daytime for a devotee is when he's practicing Krishna consciousness, when this is where a devotee becomes most active in his service to Krishna. So that's the day, whereas for a materialist, they may not appreciate that, like chanting, singing, and dancing, and they may think, what a waste of time. We hear this so often when we go out on Harinam, and don't you have a job? You know, do you have something real to do? And even sometimes, whatever they throw, whatever things, they're not so nice. Sometimes we get the reaction, like negative reactions. But oftentimes, what I hear oftentimes is like, don't you have something like real to do in the world? Don't you have a job? Why do you waste your time with a 4 or 5 hour morning program every day starting at 4:30 in the morning? And what do you get done by doing these kind of things? And so they don't understand, or many times, sometimes we don't understand really, that that's actually real activity, that that really is life. And yesterday we heard like so beautifully, I think Mother Jayabhadra, she had explained that in her relationship with Prabhupada, these few moments where she actually experiences the separation of Prabhupada, this is where she becomes alive. And this is the devotees. For us, we become alive. For us, it's day when we feel our relationship with Krishna, with a devotee, with other devotees in service. This is when we become alive. So even when we perform activities like not being aware of actually the goal to remember Krishna, or like oftentimes we're getting entangled in so many like different activities, especially when we don't live in the temple. So then we just whatever perform our different jobs, different duties that we have in the world. But sometimes, oftentimes, we're not really connected with Krishna. We don't really feel how this is actually my service here, how this is actually helping me in my spiritual life, or how this can help me to make progress spiritually. And so that's described as we don't feel alive, we don't feel enlightened. Whereas when we actually get an experience of Krishna consciousness, when we can be absorbed, when we can be in a nice kirtan, we can be in a nice Bhagavatam class, or we can chant good rounds, then we feel enlivened. We feel like, yeah, I know that's, we actually feel happy and joyful. Because we feel Krishna's reciprocation. Krishna's was pleased with us, with our endeavors. And so it's not just like the materialists out there and the devotees in here. So it's actually within ourselves, we have both these sides. Maybe some of us, some of you, I don't know, I certainly do, the materialist and the devotee inside. And it's kind of, we feel when we just kind of dry up in spiritual life, And then, like, sometimes we just have to stop and say, hey, you know, what am I doing wrong here? Why don't I feel the reciprocation? And maybe my motivation, maybe my aspiration is not proper. Maybe I'm, whatever, aspiring for material gains. Maybe the goal of my activities is whatever, wealth, fame, reputation, all these distractions that come in that are natural for us being conditioned, or for some of us being conditioned. It's to be expected that these things come in, but then we need good association, we need guidance from other devotees who can just, you know, pat us on our back or tap us on our back and kind of like adjust. Hey, you know, maybe you want to look at this, maybe you want to kind of turn a little bit to another side and look towards Krishna again, and not just so much towards your own, or the fulfillment of your own desires, or like motives. And also, we have these prayers here by Lord Shiva, and I think I had mentioned this last time, that prayers are important for us, or prayers of pure devotees are important for us, because they, again, kind of adjust our motivations, or they, again, adjust our desires. And so we can kind of learn to aspire for the real thing, and yeah, for Krishna and devotional service. And also, I was thinking a little bit more about this aspect of separation and feeling actually Krishna's reciprocation in that. I mean, for also yesterday the point was made that in order to feel separation, you have to feel intense affection first, or some affection first. Otherwise, why would you feel separation from somebody that you don't like feel affection for? Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki. And so for us, a way to, even if we may not feel a lot of affection for Krishna, or not even for devotees, but actually it said that love starts with respect, appreciation, and gratitude. So that's the base, that's the very basis. So we can always feel grateful for what we have received in a relationship, but even in like just coming here, what we have received from Prabhupada, from the devotees, we can meditate on where would I be without all this. For me, that's certainly a reason to be grateful. Just a little reminder. But to be grateful also means we have to be humble, because otherwise, if you're not humble, why would we be grateful? If I'm thinking, oh, I could have done so many other things, and I have so many good qualifications, and I'm whatever, learned and beautiful, and all these different things. Why would I feel grateful for something? Why would I feel the need to receive something? Gratitude means you acknowledge that you receive something that's greater than you, in some way. Even if you just receive a gift from somebody, it means that somebody gives us something that we don't deserve. If I feel like I'm deserving the gift, I'm not feeling grateful. If I'm feeling like I'm qualified to get that, it's, you know, it's because of my endeavors, it's because of my outstanding personality that the person is giving me something. I'm almost expecting that the person is giving me the gift, and why would I feel grateful? But if I'm thinking, oh no, why would the person give me something? You know, I certainly don't deserve it, and a person gives me a gift, then I'm like, wow, you know what? Thank you. So in Sanskrit, actually the not the modern Sanskrit, but in traditional Sanskrit, the term for thank you is kritagyaham. Thank you. I had mentioned it before. Kritagyaham. It means that I'm aware of what has been done. That's the literal translation. It's not just thank you, but it's actually an acknowledgement. Yeah, I know what has been done to me. That means I'm thinking of the favor that the other person has done to me. And the same with our relationship with Krishna. If you're not grateful, Krishna won't maybe give us things anymore. I mean, for us, just in a normal relationship, if I'm not grateful for a gift that I'm receiving, I probably won't receive a lot more gifts in the future. Because the person may not feel inclined to give me anything anymore. It's like, okay, anyway, what's the point? You know, of the, there's no reciprocation, there's no interaction. So yeah, the person may not be inclined to giving more gifts. In a similar way, Krishna is like, okay, Krishna may think, okay, the person thinks they can do themselves, okay, I let them do themselves and see, they can see what they can achieve just by themselves. And so that's the there's not just a, I mean, that's the kind of sad part of becoming proud or not being humble, not being grateful, that we can't access our relationship with Krishna anymore. Of course, the dangerous part is that we become proud, and that will take us away eventually from Krishna consciousness, because pride inherently means we're going to commit offenses. Because if I'm thinking, oh, I'm great, whatever, musician, or I'm a great something, dancer, or something, there's so many things, a good toilet cleaner, or I'm a good I know best how to pile up pots that I just washed, you know, after 10 hours in the kitchen, maha cleaning. I developed a great strategy how to pile up pots, and I'm the only one who can do that. Then naturally, if somebody else comes and wants to help us, or wants to do service with us, or wants to ask us something, or in relation to that, naturally, I'm like, you don't know how to do that. I'm much better than you. Naturally, that'll lead to offense in the long run. So, and that's a dangerous side of not feeling grateful. Talking about being active and inactive, that would refer to the night of a devotee, like feeling oneself independently, like controlling and enjoying, like independently from Krishna. That's the inactive part, the night part. In our lives. And just now coming to a different part, or the more practical part of rising early in the morning. This Prabhupada says in several occasions that we should get up in the morning, Brahma Muhurta time, 1.5 hours, about 1.5 hours before sunrise, which I guess living in Belgium is not so bad in the winter. In the summer it gets more difficult. When I was in Alaska, we had like 22 hours of sunlight, so I wasn't quite sure how to take Prabhupada's instructions there, but that means like you don't sleep at all, basically. But Prabhupada gave us a simple process for that also. We don't have to get too caught up mentally. He said, okay, 4:30 Mangala Arati, no matter what. Sometimes some temples it's 5, so it's very simple. We don't have to get all like calculative and like asking different astrologers what time exactly I have to get up here. Prabhupada made it very simple for us. Yesterday we also heard that Prabhupada gave us a very simple process, and if you just try to follow that, then our life will be perfect. So getting up early in the morning, and then the instruction he has given that one should chant with folded hands and also with faith and devotion prayers. And also in the Pancharatra Pradipa it said that it's advised that the first thing we do after getting up is we offer our obeisances to our spiritual master and we chant Krishna's names. We chant Hare Krishna or some mantras glorifying Krishna. And one of the purports that the devotees had written was that you offer your obeisances to the spiritual master first, because that kind of sets your mood for the day. It's like a positive affirmation. Yes, you know, whatever I'm doing today, I want to do that as an offering for my spiritual master, and that's a very strong sanskara strong impression that's being created in the mind for all our activities throughout the day. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya, he instructs Sanatan Goswami about various things that we're supposed to do after getting up. It's in Madhya Lila 24. I'll just read a few sentences. Lord Chaitanya himself says, in the morning the devotee should regularly brush his teeth, take his bath, offer prayers to the Lord, and offer obeisances to the spiritual master. He should render service to the spiritual master and paint his body in 12 places with Urdhva Pundra, Tilak. He should stamp the holy names of the Lord on his body, or he should stamp the symbols of the Lord, such as a disc, a club, and club. After this, he should describe how the devotee should decorate his body with Gopichandan, wear neck beads, collect tulsi leaves from the tulsi tree, cleanse his cloth and the altar, and so forth, cleanse different parts of the house. So we don't only try to purify ourselves mentally, but also physically, just by taking bath, brushing teeth, and all these things that are described, because it's said that the night or sleep is an aspect of, or a product of tamagun, or the mode of ignorance, so many impure things collect, and we want to free ourselves from these. So that's the external aspect of it, and the internal aspect is the meditation on the Lord and on Krishna and his devotees. And in Krishna book, that's quite, I always thought it was interesting. In Krishna book, Krishna describes what he does when he gets up in the morning. Prabhupada says here that Lord Krishna would immediately get up from bed exactly on the appearance of Brahma Muhurta. So yeah, I guess Gopinath's waking up as well. It's not just us. After rising from bed, Lord Krishna would wash his mouth, hands, and feet, and would immediately sit down and meditate on himself. And of course, Prabhupada clarifies here that this does not mean, however, that we should also sit down and meditate on ourselves. We have to meditate upon Krishna, Radha Krishna. This is real meditation. And then after his meditation, the Lord would regularly bathe early in the morning with clear, sanctified water. And then the description is given, he would change his dress. And so even Krishna sits down and meditates upon himself after getting up. So, yeah, we can do that as well. Also in Chaitanya Charitamrita further, in Purport, Prabhupada says that, in early morning hours, one should get up and immediately chant Hare Krishna, or at least Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. In this way, one should remember Krishna. Some shlokas or prayers should also be chanted. By chanting, one immediately becomes auspicious and transcendental to the infection of material qualities. Actually, one has to chant and remember Lord Krishna 24 hours daily, or as much as possible. And by creating these sanskaras or impressions in the mind in the morning, it's very conducive to remember Krishna throughout the day. Also for those devotees that have second initiation, chanting the Gayatri mantras 3 times a day, it's described the sandhyas, or the times when we chant our Gayatris. These are the transition periods between the different modes, like in general, like in the morning it's sattvic, but then you prepare your mind to even transcend the mode of sattva. And then at noontime, there's a transition period, like a general transition period between sattvas and rajas. Rajas is predominant in the afternoon. So we prepare our minds to, by chanting at noontime, we prepare our minds, our consciousness to transcend the mode of passion. And then in the evening again, at night, the mode of tamas is predominant, so by chanting the Gayatri in the evening, it's said that we prepare ourselves to transcend the mode of ignorance. So in that way, throughout the whole day, we think of Krishna, we remember him with whatever other things we are doing. Also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya is described as like being very happy when he hears Sarva Bhoma Bhattacharya, waking up and chanting immediately Krishna's names. Like he knocks on Sarva Bhoma Bhattacharya's door, and he doesn't hear anything else yet, but just the chanting of Krishna's names, and then Sarva Bhoma Bhattacharya opens the door and welcomes the Lord. So Lord Chaitanya is very happy about that. And there's also different prayers that we can chant, and one of them is a famous one that we also recite during initiation ceremonies. Amma pavitra pavitrova sarvavatanka topiva yasmarit pundarika aksha sabaya bhyantaram shuchihi. So even whether somebody is pure or impure or has gone through various phases in life, just by remembering Pundarika Aksha, the lotus-eyed Lord, one immediately becomes purified. So this is one of the prayers And then also Prabhupada here in the purport, he speaks about liberation or mukti. So this is the sadhya or the goal that's been suggested in this verse. And in, we just did the Vedanta course, so in Vedantic discourses you often have the one of the debates that the different acharyas discuss is the concept of liberation in this material world. Can somebody, a devotee, be liberated while still being in the physical body? It's called jiva and mukta. And like for instance Ramanuja Acharya, he says, no, you cannot, because the physical body means you have karma. Your physical body means it's a reaction of previously performed sinful activities. So you cannot be liberated in this as long as you have a body. Now of course our acharyas, specifically Rupa Goswami, he gives this verse where actually no, you can be liberated in this world, in this body. And the verse that's that he composed to kind of make the point how this is possible, it's found in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the Nectar of Devotion. We have Prabhupada's summary study, the Nectar of Devotion. Iha yasya hare dasye karmana manasagira. So it says that just by a desire, iha yasya hare dasye, to serve Hari or Krishna, with karmana, the works or actions, manasa, the mind, and gira, or words. Just having a desire to dedicate or to serve Krishna with the body, the mind, and words, for us that means liberation. That person is called liberated. And interestingly enough, Rupa Goswami doesn't describe this in the later parts of the book where he talks about the goal. He puts this verse right in the section where he talks about sadhana bhakti, or devotional service and practice, which is in the first parts of the first wave. So this is very relevant for us. Prabhupada also says here in the purport that if we simply engage in devotional service, like all the time with our body, minds, and words, then we are acting on a liberated platform, which means we are liberated, according to Rupa Goswami. And maybe we may not have the realization, we may not feel, okay, I'm part of Krishna's pastimes or Lord Chaitanya's pastimes in whatever way, but if we simply follow the process, if we follow our acharyas, if we follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions, then that means we are acting on the liberated platform. And that also means that that's what we're going to do after this life. We keep being engaged in the service of the Lord. But now, just one more thing that I want to kind of bring the attention to is that it says in this verse that it's the desire for serving the Lord. So we may be engaged in all kind of services, but if our desire is differently, if our desire, sometimes we're in the temple, we're doing service, and we're like, oh gosh, I wish I was just doing whatever. I would go go-kart driving in Parvo, like there's this go-kart place, or whatever. You know, there's so many desires, so many things come up. Oh, I wish I would be at another place doing something else and enjoying being on a party or watching a movie, or so many like desires come up. And I also pointed out last time, these are prayers. So Krishna will reciprocate with the desires. Also in the Nectar of Devotion, it is described that Krishna is more concerned about the motivation, the heart, the desire of the devotee than with the specific service itself. Of course, our service is our expression of that desire. Or even if it's not an expression, it's a practice. Okay, I want to have that desire. I understand this is a good thing. So I'm practicing here. I'm doing this service, and please, Krishna, give me some desire for serving you. So even if it's just an intellectual platform, that's also okay. But again, the goal, excuse me, the goal has to be clear. Why do we do that? What's our aspiration here? And okay, I'll just read one more short quote from the Nectar of Devotion. From one of Krishna's qualities, later on in the Nectar of Devotion, there's different qualities of Krishna described, and one of these qualities is that he's controlled by love. And Prabhupada says, Krishna becomes obliged to the loving spirit of the devotee and not exactly to the service rendered. No one can serve Krishna completely. He is so complete and self-sufficient that he has no need of any service from the devotee. It is the devotee's attitude of love and affection for Krishna that makes him obliged. And then he gives the example of Sudama Vipra. I want to end just with the story of Sudama Vipra. It's kind of inspiring that he was Krishna's friend from childhood. They went together to Gurukul, and you know, he was a Brahmana, poor Brahmana. Later on, he moved to another place, and he was really poor. And his wife was kind of urging him, you know, can you just go to Krishna and, you know, get us some, you know, nice place and some material facilities? Just, you know, he's so rich, you know, he's a king, and he has so many things. And can you just ask him for something? He was like, okay, you know. And Sudama, he went to Dvaraka, I think it was in Dvaraka, and he approaches Krishna, and actually he has in his mind, you know, yeah, I have to ask him for something. But then he just ends up getting so absorbed in his conversation with Krishna that he totally forgets about his initial motivation why he came to Krishna. And so he's just like totally happy and blissful, and he leaves. And then later on he remembers his wife. I was like, oh gosh, you know, I totally forgot to ask Krishna for something. And he comes home and he finds a big palace. You know, Krishna had transformed his little hut, his little poor house, into a nice place, because Krishna understood what actually Sudama Vipra wanted. But he was so pleased with Sudama that actually he became just happy being with Krishna. He didn't need anything else anymore. And I think this is also our hope, that, okay, we have so many material desires, we have so many different motivations, but once we just try to serve Krishna, maybe we get attracted to him. And our hope is that we get attracted to him, because he's all attractive. He's more attractive than whatever we can desire in this world. Even if we want fame or wealth or reputation or recognition or so many other things that are there, if we keep worshipping Krishna, maybe if we get some, our hope is that we get some glimpses of his sweetness, of his attractive nature. And then so all these little insignificant things, they're not so important anymore for us. And then we actually want just to be with Krishna, serve his devotees. Baladevida Bhushana, he describes that that's the process, also why Krishna says, akarma sarva karma va moksha karma udharati. No matter what kind of desires you have, if you have no desires, no material desires, if you are full of material desires, if you want liberation, whatever you want, just worship Krishna with intense devotion. Tivrena bhakti yogena, tivra bhakti, with intense devotion. And then hopefully we get attracted to him and his service. Okay, is there comments, corrections, questions? Frustrating.
and the whole process is spoiled completely by this. On the other hand, I thought, okay, but everybody, all of us, like to receive. And obviously, unless we have this state of mind of being appreciative and grateful, then we cannot receive. But, I mean, whatever I could figure out while thinking about it, is that the only way is to become genuinely humble. And that's the problem. Really thinking all the time under all circumstances of being undeserving, and like that's a task. I guess it's worse. It's not the way.
Well, thank you for your comment. Mm-hmm. Okay, just almost time. It's still half a minute, I think.
I always wonder to what extent is
Thanks for tolerating.
To what extent my material desires, they're more associated with maybe my family and things like that. But what degree of, is that less self-centered or whatever? Or it's still material, of course. But it's my desires for something. Not necessarily for me, but for, you know, them. Or I'm associated with them. And like, you know, keeping my family reputation nice, so you don't have to do that. And different things. I wonder, okay, so I'm willing to do any service, but if I end up being the toilet cleaner in the temple, how's that going to affect, you know, my temple and also my family's, you know, reputation and everything? Is that really a bad material desire to have to be, not to be someone, but to be something that's worthy of whatever material it is? Superficially, for their sake, more so than is that.
So your question is, I'm trying to. if you want to achieve something, or you want to achieve something in this, just have some position or achieving something in this material world. Also for the sake of your family, so that there's like their reputation. So is that like a material desire? To what extent is that selfish or?
But
somebody has comments on that.
Extended selfishness.
Extended self. Okay.
It's better than thinking of oneself. Second best.
Let's see. Yeah. At least you want to be, you want to have a position because of somebody else, not just because of your own like reputation. Yeah. I mean, one thing that comes to my mind is the question, okay, is that really what they would want? What they would really make them happy? Because if you, let's say, just on this level of family affection and relationships in this, we're not even talking about whatever, pure devotion to Krishna, you know, just let's be just down here. I'd be curious if that would actually make them happy. If you did this for them, or how much there's your own desire for these things involved, and then you just kind of, oh, it's actually, you know, I do this for them. You know, it's the rationalization of your own desires, of your own material desires, to kind of, you know, keep the.
Why are we like disappointing expectations?
Right. And of course, I mean, your family, they are devotees, so I guess that would be a little bit different than for most of us. Is there any more intelligent comments or And especially if your parents are devotees, I mean, what would make them most proud? If you do something big for Krishna, and if you do something, if that's your desire, then better do it. And better just pray to Krishna to give you facility to employ it, and then eventually you realize actually Krishna is sweeter than the big thing for Krishna. That's our hope, I guess. Yeah, I mean, we got to be honest with where we are at and what's, you know, what's our level of advancement, and then just offer it to Krishna and pray for that he is employing. And because if we don't, if we keep our desires for ourselves and then we do something for Krishna, but actually we want something else, Krishna sees that. He's, you know, he's in our hearts. He knows where we're at. And then he won't interfere with the process. He's like, okay, if she prays for that, I'll be there. If, you know, if she thinks she can handle it by herself, figure it out herself, okay, you know, try. So, yeah, better just to be honest. Okay, Krishna, I know I really want to do that for you. I was like, okay, let's see what we can do. And then also we are protected. If we offer our desires to Krishna, he usually fulfills them in a way that one thing, we don't want it again, ever. Because it's like, okay, Krishna, this is way too much responsibility. This is so many things. Like, so many people get mad at me. I have so many whatever. Like, there's just so many circumstances that I really don't want. Okay, I got it. I got the point. And also he fulfills it in a way that it'll be also beneficial for our spiritual life, that we can actually do something for him. So better just offer our desires to Krishna and say, okay, you know, whatever you want me to do with that, it's... Srila Prabhupada ki.